November 11th is Veterans Day. Here to give us a perspective on women in war and female veterans is Doris Weatherford, a political consultant and freelance writer who is the author of American Women and World War II, published by Facts on File. Welcome, Ms. Weatherford.
Hi, how are you?
Let me begin with the simplest question. When did women first enter military service in the United States?
Well, actually, that's not a simple question at all. I'm sorry. it really is quite technical. In the first woman to earn a soldier's pension was Margaret Corbin in the Revolutionary War. There have been women in every war that America has ever fought, although usually not formally or intentionally. But in the Revolution, there were women who participated. Molly Pitcher is not a legendary figure. She was a real woman. Her name was Mary Hayes. There were other women who received soldiers' pensions and who were recognized as members of the military. The same was true in the Civil War. On both sides, there were women who were given rank, who were acknowledged as members of the military. A book by a man named Frank Moore that was published in 1866, just a year after the war was over, said that he thought as many as 400 graves of unidentified people might have been women who had disguised themselves as men and fought. I think that's probably high. But the point is that there have always been women who have participated in the military itself, in addition to huge numbers of women who've played supportive roles. Formally, there were women who were contract employees of the Army during the Spanish-American War, and from that, the military realized that they needed a nurse corps. So the nurse corps, Army Nurse Corps, was created in 1901, the Navy Nurse Corps in 1908. And then in the last days of World War I, the Navy researched its enlistment law and saw that it didn't say anything about gender, and they enlisted about 13,000 women in the Navy and in a lesser number, about 300 in the Marines in the last days of World War I. And then the WAC, the Army, the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps initially, and then later the Women's Army Corps itself was created in 1942. By the middle of 1943, every branch of the military had a unit for women.
Mm-hmm. Now, what kinds of roles did women perform in the various branches of the armed services?
Almost everything, and really earlier than people think. Of the Army's 625 military occupational specialties, MOSs, women were doing 401 already by the early days of World War II. Women did everything from air traffic control to map drawing to computing to working as mechanics. They trained dogs, they trained carrier pigeons, they worked as instructors, especially teaching men all kinds of things that needed to be learned.
Now, did
there
did
were
men
hundreds who were photographers, just mm-hmm. lots and lots of jobs.
Now, I mean, did men easily accept these women as their teachers?
Actually, surprisingly, yes. The first thing you have to understand is that the average woman who enlisted was older than the average man, especially the average man who was drafted. These women went of their own free will. They were not drafted like men were. And so automatically you get people who are more patriotic, who have higher qualifications, and men are accustomed to being taught by women in school, in high school, and the instructors did not face a lot of problem with that. Often, men didn't realize, or at least sometimes they didn't realize they were being taught by women. There were women in the WASP, the Women's Air Service Pilots, for example, who were themselves well-qualified pilots, and who did things like train men to shoot at planes by flying the plane, and the men were supposed to hit the banner that was trailing along behind the plane, and often the men on the ground didn't know that that plane was being towed by a woman.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In World War II, where did women serve? That is, I mean, you know, which theaters of war?
Again, it's a little bit complex. The Nurse Corps was everywhere. The Army Nurse Corps served everywhere from Alaska to Australia and points in between, even remote places like Iran and India. There were members of the Nurse Corps who were on Bataan Corridor when the Japanese first started bombing there and who were prisoners of war for the duration. When Congress passed the act that created the WACS, the Army Nurse Corps, or excuse me, the Women's Army Corps, they allowed women to go everywhere, and WACS did. The WACS opened up for recruitment in May of 42, and by the end of that year, the first WACS were on their way to North Africa. Congress, however, did not, they wrote in a restriction on the Navy when they created the WAVES, and the WAVES were not allowed to go overseas, although many women joined the WAVES hoping that they would and being told by recruiters that this was a distinct possibility, but it actually was not until late in the war that the WAVES finally got to go, which was a tremendous underutilization because WAVES had to be college graduates to join, and a lot of them could have done more overseas than they were allowed to do.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, did the United States use women in combat zones or in combat?
Not deliberately, not intentionally, no. But by accident, it happens a lot. Again, especially with the Nurse Corps. Nurses were bombed many times. Navy nurses on ships, Army nurses on land.
Mm-hmm. Who joined the various services and why?
Most of the women who joined did so for genuinely patriotic reasons. Some saw it as a career opportunity because you've got to remember we're coming out of a depression where women had not been able to get jobs, anything like their abilities. And so the women who joined, particularly the naval branches, with their requirements for college education, were looking for career opportunities for advancement. But the overwhelming reason is patriotism. They wanted to win the war. Most of them had a very personal reason. They had a husband, a son, a brother, a boyfriend, somebody that they wanted this war to be over and bring that person home.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned the depression. I mean, did mostly women from poorer classes join?
Not so much, again, because of the educational requirements. You had to be a high school graduate to join the Army, and in the Navy you had to be either a college graduate or have had some college plus some professional experience. So that eliminated large numbers of people because in the 40s, many, many people were not college or were not high school graduates, and it meant that it was almost automatically a little bit elitist.
Mm-hmm. Did white and black join in proportional numbers?
Lots of controversy over that, lots of discussion. Ovita Kaphabi, who was the woman who commanded the army, was accused of racism almost at the beginning, almost the day she took office, simply because she was from Texas. So she went out of her way to recruit black women. The effect, however, was to end up hurting her own corps, because people came to see the WAC as less desirable because there were black women in it. We were still a very openly racist society. The WAVES then decided not to be so welcoming to blacks, did not accept them for a long, long time, not until deep into the war. And so, again, the answer to the question is a little bit complex. They tried to join, they were willing to serve, but the educational requirements and the elitist attitude kept them out.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of black women that got in the service, and it was an era of segregation, what kind of roles were they allowed to perform?
Not as much as they were qualified to do. They were most likely to be sent off to the cooking and laundry kinds of duties. But there were some who achieved. In fact, it was a black WAC unit in France that held the record for speed in sorting mail.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so they acted in the postal service for
right.
Okay. Now, as you mentioned, women weren't drafted but recruited. Were enough women recruited to fulfill as many posts as the various branches wanted?
Again, it varied by time. When the Army first opened up applications for women, there were over 13,000 who applied on the first day for 450 available slots. So there was clearly a deep reservoir there of women who wanted to serve. As the war went on, no, they were not able to meet their enlistment quotas for the same reasons that the mail services weren't able to do that. Actually, we should probably go back and say something here about the Army Nurse Corps that most folks are unaware of. We did almost draft nurses. President Roosevelt, in his State of the Union speech in January of 45, proposed drafting nurses, and the House passed the bill. It had been favorably reported out by the Senate when the Army got to Berlin, and there was no longer any need, and the bill was dropped. But had the war gone on even a month longer in Europe, that bill would have passed, and we would have had the precedent for drafting nurses.
Mm-hmm. And that's obviously because there was a shortage?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. A tremendous shortage. Mm-hmm. And there they did put some WACs into the medical corps, but, you know, the military has these traditions and turf wars, and the WACs who were put into the medical corps generally were not well received either by the nurse corps or by the male end of the medical corps. And many highly qualified women who had degrees in biology and so forth ended up as mop commandos, and there was a lot of discontent in that area.
Mm. Now, in terms of the World War II vet, we know of all these basic programs that were passed and the help from all of the various veterans organizations. Now, women as veterans, did they receive the same kinds of benefits and help?
On paper, yes, for most of them. In reality, no. They were just not encouraged to think of themselves as veterans. The Veterans of Foreign Wars kept them out of that organization, even as late as the 70s. President Carter made a speech to a VFW convention and urged them to admit women, and was shouted down. If they did join veterans organizations at all, they were relegated to the female auxiliaries and were there with the wives, and that, of course, is not the experience that they had. So they generally did not take out the housing loans or the employment loans that they could have. Some of them did use it to go back to college, but disappointingly few, especially given that the commander, the woman who commanded the naval, the waves, was herself a college president, President Wellesley College in Massachusetts. There was a disappointing failure to connect the colleges with these women.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost intentional, in my view, almost as though they didn't want these worldly, experienced, sophisticated women on their campuses.
Ah. And does that match the attitudes of the times? I mean, it was 1946, 1947. Was that to be expected?
Yes, yes. And another thing we have to factor in there is that colleges were so crowded with men using the GI Bill that some colleges just flat out banned women, didn't admit any women at all in 46 and 47. And other colleges that had been state-supported colleges for women, for example, what currently is Florida State University, used to be Florida College for Women, and when all these men came back from the war and wanted to use the GI Bill, it became a coeducational school, and the women were shoved off to the side.
Mm. Doesn't seem fair, but that's the way history is sometimes.
Yes.
Well, that's all the time we have. I want to thank our guest, Doris Weatherford, author of American Women and World War II, for an insightful discussion.